From the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, welcome to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm your host, garden expert Teresa Watkins. I love helping people with their gardening questions and seeing all of your beautiful gardens. This week, I've had great experiences, and I'm going to be talking about them today. Good morning, Lizzie.
Good morning.
How was your Friday the 13th?
It was stupendous. I like Friday the 13th. That doesn't bother me.
So. It doesn't bother you, yeah. And it doesn't bother me either. I love it, and it's just the perfect month for it.
Yes.
Because this is our Halloween month, and this is our, you know, festival month for fall, and so it's just wonderful. This week, we had a cold front go through with rainfalls in the amounts of 2 to 3 inches in North Florida, and they desperately needed that. So they have not been getting the rainfall we've seen here in Central Florida. And then down in South Florida, especially in Venice and that area, we've been hearing from our listeners, Mike in Venice. They're down like 20 inches for the year still, and they have not caught up. But he had an inch of rain this week. So we're so pleased about that. Bob in Newberry let us know that he got down to 40 degrees on Monday.
What?
40 degrees on Monday in North Florida. And Jim in Newberry had 43. So fall is definitely here. We're going to get little glimpses of it, you know, here and there this week. We're going to have highs this week in North Florida from the 60s and lows in the 40s. Central Florida, we're going to have highs in the low 70s. And highs in the 70s. And then lows in the mid-50s. And then South Florida, you're going to have a few days in the mid-70s and lows in the 60s, which is a relief from the 95-degree temperatures
we've
been seeing. And so this year, we've had over 120 days of temperatures over 95 degrees. And usually we only get about 100, 110. So we've got a little bit more hot weather, but it's El Nino. And we're going to be seeing a little bit of that, but I am so looking forward to the winter time. So these cooler temperatures are going to give us that fall feeling, but it's going to back up to the 70s and 80s next week. It's going to be great gardening week, but after that, the week after, we're going to see even cooler temperatures.
All right. I beat the crowd, and 2 weeks ago, I went ahead and bought all my stuff to make homemade chili because I hate whenever the temperatures drop. It's like trying to go in and find a jacket or a pair of jeans for the grand brats. It's like, really? It's like now all of a sudden, now everybody wants to buy them, and I'm one of those, all of a sudden. But I beat it. I beat it, and it's already sitting on my shelf, and it's just looking at me, and the stuff's in the freezer.
Yep, and it's just ready for you to cook and get that fall stew. I love cooking stews and shepherd's pie and all the thick, rich, dishes that we get in the fall. And so I agree with you. And so we have the world's largest pumpkin, Lizzie. Hmm. And so this week, a horticultural teacher from Anoka, Minnesota, he set a new world record in California on Monday for the heaviest pumpkin. And he grew a jack-o'-lantern gourd weighing 2,749 pounds.
Holy cheese and crackers. That is big.
That's huge. And he won the 50th World Championship Pumpkin Weigh-Off in Half Moon Bay, which is in San Francisco. And the lumpy orange pumpkin can produce 687 pumpkin pies.
Offsprings.
And so we could eat that for months and months and months. And so it's a new U.S. world record, and it beat the 2021 world record by 47 pounds. He grows the pumpkins in his pumpkin patch in his backyard, and he said this year he decided to give his plants extra care. He watered them up to 12 times a day and feeding and fertilizing them a bit more than usual. And so he won $30,000 for growing the biggest pumpkin and setting a new world record, but he spent $15,000 growing it.
Oh.
Yeah, and so that's a lot. And so, Lizzie, you and I, we've both been pregnant, and we gain weight, and it's something like overnight, you know, we just gain pounds.
Oh, yeah.
But do you know what this 2023 world record pumpkin, at its peak, how many pounds a day it gained?
I 15 pounds, maybe
66 pounds a day.
Oh, how does it fit into his jeans?
I don't. I'm wondering if did he put it on a scale? How did he know how much weight it was gaining every day? So that's
he probably grew it on a scale or put. You know what I'm saying? Because you know, like the roads that they have the roads set up
yeah.
where tractor trailers go across, and it just goes across it. So maybe he planned on his pumpkins to do that well.
I don't know, but it just grew 66 pounds a day at its peak. And so congratulations to Travis Ginger, or Ginger. I don't know how he pronounced his last name. Sorry. But in Minnesota, he won the 50th World Championship pumpkin growing. So that's really pretty cool. So you can go on our Facebook page. I mentioned that I've had a lot of great landscaping and nature sightings this week. I will tell you, in the rainfall this week, I was going across Lake Jessup, and my mind was blown. It was incredible. I saw this gorgeous acres and acres of blooming yellow swamp sunflower in amongst the cabbage palms and the oak trees. And if you go into our Facebook page, Better Lawns and Gardens, you can see the video of what I saw coming across Lake Jessup. And it's just incredible. It was, like I said, a scene right out of a Highwayman painting. And so just wonderful. Just
I'm born and raised here. I've been over Lake Jessup quite a few times. I have never noticed it or been at that exact moment. You said how long? What, a couple weeks or something
like that?
It's
going to be 2 to 3 weeks. So you can go by it, I think, for another week or so. But if you want to get back out there, but if you don't want to, you can go to our Facebook page and see the video and the photographs that I took. Lizzie, have you started your Christmas shopping yet?
Yes.
Okay, well, Tony and I have too, and we have Jim Charlier coming up with a great book for Harry Potter fans. Can't wait. And so from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios, I'm Teresa Watkins. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. To say Jim Charlier is creative is an understatement. As the owner of a successful advertising, design, and marketing company, he is also one of the founders of the Garden Buffalo Niagara, which holds the event of the largest garden walk in the United States. He's a garden blogger with his column Art of Gardening and co-author of two books, Buffalo Style Gardens, Creating a Quirky, One-of-a-Kind Private Garden with Eye-Catching Designs. He wrote with Sally Cunningham. And the Harry Potter Herbology Magic, Botanical Projects, Terrariums, and Gardens Inspired by the Wizarding World with Judy Revenson. And it was just published this month. Good morning, Jim. It's great to have you on this morning.
Good morning, Teresa. It's nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much. What are the temperatures right now in Buffalo, New York?
It's in the 40s at night, and during the day, you know, it's pleasant, high 60s, maybe even hitting 70.
Oh, I bet that is beautiful. I have to ask, since you've been involved for 29 years with the world-famous Gardens Buffalo Niagara, which sponsors these incredible events, like the largest garden walk in the United States, the Buffalo Garden Walk, which I will tell you that almost 8 years ago, was personally transformative in my garden design career. And so how was the Garden Buffalo Walk this summer?
It was good. Next year is our 30th anniversary, and this year, for the first time in 29 years, it rained for an entire day.
Oh.
Normally we get between, 60 and 70,000 people coming to Buffalo to enjoy this walk. And I usually get, 1,500 to 2,000 people in my garden alone each day.
That's incredible.
But we still had 500-600 people show up in the rain.
Isn't that incredible? That is wonderful. That's dedicated garden lovers.
You can't stop a gardener.
And so one of the incredible aspects of the Buffalo Garden Walk, and it just kind of blew me away because we have the situation here in Florida, is the size of their gardens. And so they These homes are private gardens, private homeowners that just love to garden, and they have small front yards, narrow side yards. They garden on the roof and tiny backyards, and these properties are zero lot lines, packed with beautiful plants that are fragrant and lots of beautiful art. So I'd love for you to describe your truly unique features of your Harry Potter garden, and then tell us about how big your backyard is.
My garden is typical of an urban lot. You know, I've got the health strip out front, the area between sidewalk and street, and wherever your listeners are, they probably call it something different than a health strip, but it's health for a plant in Buffalo. And then I've got a very, very small front yard, and then a decent size side yard, considering it's, I'm hemmed in by neighbors, and then barely any space behind the house because there's a garage back there also. So it's not that big a space. So, when you own an urban lot like that, you tend to try to take advantage of every space you've got, vertical, obviously the ground, ceilings, arbors, that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of built structures in the gardens in Buffalo.
And so describe the shed, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. And so what inspired you to create your Harry Potter Wizarding World garden?
The garden came about when my daughter was very little. She's 25 now. When she was about 7 or 8 years old, we started reading the first Harry Potter book to her. And we were intrigued by the number of plants that were in the book, the fictional plants, obviously. So I wanted to get her involved and interested in gardening. So we would go out to the garden centers, and we would look for the silliest looking, the funniest looking, weirdest looking plants. And, generally they're, not from this zone.
Right.
And a lot of them are tropicals. And we'd bring them back, and we'd plant them together. And then I'm an art director, designer, so I made little labels with the names from the Harry Potter books, with descriptions of what each plant does, its magical properties. And then we would put those signs on there. And I've been on this Garden Walk Buffalo now for about 30 years old. I've been on it for going on 29 years now. And people would come into the yard and they would look at these signs, and, the people who are Harry Potter fans would get it, and they, laugh, and they, they like gillyweed, you can breathe underwater. But, the fun part is when people who are muggles that do not know, they're non-magical humans, look at these labels and they ask, where can you buy this? Where did you buy this? I've never heard of this. And then at that point, we have to tell them it's a magical, fictional garden.
So before we dig into the book, Harry Potter, Herbology Magic, I have to ask, was J.K. Rowling involved with this project? Because you have beautiful photographs of your projects, but also, too, from the movie. You have stills from the movie.
J.K. Rowling's only involvement is she probably collects some of the money. this is a publisher out in California, Insight Editions, and they have the licensing rights to use any of the... Actually, we could not use anything from the books because this book was done for Warner Brothers. So anything I had in the books had to come from the movies.
Interesting.
Because Warner Brothers has the licensing rights to the movies. So they approached me to do this book. If you just Google Harry Potter garden, especially in Google Images, my garden comes up, and that's sort of how they found me. But, by the time they realized I'd done another book with a different publisher, and I've got a blog with DIY art projects on it, it just seemed like a natural fit for them.
Oh, it's wonderful. I thoroughly enjoyed it. So the Harry Potter series has sold millions of copies in dozens of languages for anyone who doesn't know about the Harry Potter series. Many fans, including my husband, Tony, who wishes the world was real and not fantasy. He would love that. And so your book, though, actually translates a fantasy world into reality. So what was your first project that you put into the book?
Well, it was funny because they approached me and I said, what do you want me to do? And they have a few other Harry Potter craft books, one on paper crafts, one on Harry Potter crocheting, another one on Harry Potter knitting, Harry Potter home. So this was the gardening version. So they already had sort of a format where all these projects are step-by-step instructions on how to make them. This is the gardening version. I actually pitched, I think, 44 different crafts. And then we were able to narrow that down to about the, I think there's 27 or 29 in the book. They had to relate to something in the Harry Potter movie, obviously. And that's what Jody, my co-writer, she wrote the introduction to each of these crafts. And then I would write the instructions. I don't really remember what the first one was that was approved, but I know one of my favorites was like a Harry Potter Wizarding World wayfinding sign. You know, one of those signposts where...
Yes, where you can go to Key West or Africa and Russia.
Yeah, in this case, you know, it's Hogwarts or, you know, Nocturne Alley or Hogsmeade or Diagon Alley. That was one of my favorites only because, I'm an art director. And I could, like, play with typography and do fun things like that. But that was a fun project to do. And then all the photography, actually, the projects, apart from the terrariums, all the projects were actually shipped out to California to be photographed.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, you know, it was Buffalo in February. What are you going to do here? So everything was shipped out there, and then when it was all done, they shipped everything back to me. And then they had to recreate the terrariums out there from the instructions I had in the book.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned the terrariums. So you got beautiful Edwardian terrariums that people can create. And then you have the sorting hat hanging basket. I love that one. And the Cornish pixie air plant cages are one of my favorites. And then the Deathly Hallows trellis. So as I read through the book and looking at all these different projects, I notice they have varying skill levels. What are some of the projects that a parent can do have a time with their children and build?
Oh, there's quite a few in there. You know, the book was not done for kids. One of the reasons I talked over with the publisher is the fact that the book started coming out 25 years ago. So those 10-year-old kids back then are now 35. You know, they're buying their own houses. They're having their own kids. So we wanted the book to be relevant to someone in their 30s as well. But there are varying skill levels, and many of them require different some power tools. So they're good projects to do with kids. But there's pretty easy Neville Longbottom's propagation station, which is just some drilled holes and some wood and some leather straps, and you put test tubes in the holes so that you can have a propagation station to keep to propagate new plants. And then there's instructions on how to propagate plants, the many different ways you can propagate plants. Even the Cornish pixie air plant cage is very, very easy, except you have to make your own monster. And there's instructions on how to make your monster out of modeling clay, but really it's just a cage with air plants.
It's wonderful. It looks so great. So you include many of the projects, many of the herbs and fantasy plants from the books and movie, and you actually say how to care for them. How do you help people find the resources, the plants themselves?
It's a book, so you can't have links in there, there are often times when we reference things and we have them, you know, suggest that people go and look for these online. There's a whole list of actual real herbs in there. There is a list of great plants for terrariums. There's many lists of many plants that look like plants that were in the book.
That are fantasy.
It would be the kind of thing I would put in my garden, and then we'd find names for them, and there's a list of that. And then we've got even a real but weird list of plants, which are, great plants that actually exist that also have either weird names or weird features.
It's great. It's a wonderful book, Jim. I'm so excited for it. How can people find, real quickly, how can people find your two books, Buffalo Style Gardens and Harry Potter's Herbology?
They're both on Amazon. That's the place. But if someone would like a signed copy, they can visit my blog, my garden blog, at artofgardening.org.
Thank you so much, Jim. Take care. Now it's from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. It's Saturday morning. You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. And welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. A big thank you to Jim Charlier. He is the co-author of the Harry Potter's Magic Herbology Magic. And it is got great projects in it. Projects like the Sorting Hat, Hanging Basket, the Wizarding Wayfinding Signpost, the Whomping Willow.
Oh, wow.
Whomping Willow Bonsai, which is great. It's just interesting. And then the Black Lake Water Garden. So all sorts of different Harry Potter projects that will make a great Christmas book. So please check that out. So we're really, really pleased to get that. If you have a gardening question, now is the time to give us a call, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. I want to let you know that at Peterson Nursery today at 9:30, they're going to have a lecture called Lawns 101. And this is a time to be really taking care of your lawn. I have some gardening questions coming up about it. And but you need to, if you're in the Lakeland area and you want to learn more about your lawn, taking care of your grass, you know, how to mow it, what to do for to prepare it for winter time. And even though this is Florida, we do need to take care of our grass before winter gets here. So this is going to be a great class, and that's at Peterson's Nursery in Lakeland. So you'll want to check that out. And so that's at 2184 East County Road, 540A in Lakeland. All right, 9:30 a.m. this morning. So we thank Howie Peterson for sponsoring the show, and he's one of it's just got a great nursery. So I dare you not to go there and not get something. They're just wonderful. I also want to, we've got some questions coming up about growing magnolias from seed. Linda in the Ishnatuckney Springs area, we're going to be talking about that. And then also, too, I wanted to let you know, Linda also said in Brantford, Florida this week, they got down to 38 degrees. 38 degrees in Florida in October.
No, lies, lies, shenanigans.
So that's exciting for me. Let's go to Eileen in Polk City. Good morning, Eileen. How are you this week?
I am good. We got rain.
Yay.
And I'm so happy we did.
It was just right there to the decline of everything you have.
I was so happy. I couldn't believe it. Now, I want to talk to you about the caterpillars, the slugs. Are they all gone?
No. No, we haven't really had enough cold weather for the insects to be gone. We're going to have a wet winter this year. We're going to have some really cold days this winter. And that should take care of some of the issues. But slugs and everything, they just come back every year. So they go underground. They're in the ground underneath plants. So they're kind of protected here in Florida. The ground doesn't get cold enough, or we don't get cold long enough cold spells to, get rid of them entirely. But I understand what you mean about slugs and, all those kind of bad insects.
Yeah, great. Okay, thank you.
Well, some of the best things you can do, and, being dry is helpful, Eileen. So, if you have issues with slugs and that is an area where you can do something about, you want to make sure that you have good aeration, that it doesn't stay too wet. So if it's in an area that's in the shade, you're going to get them. And you can get snail and slug bait, and that will get rid of them.
Yeah, I already have the slug bait, but I wanted to check.
Yeah, no.
Now, is this a good time for mums?
It's a wonderful time for mums. So, yes.
Because I bought a whole bunch of them.
Well, that's wonderful. So send me some pictures. You know, this is a good time of the year for moms. You can put them in the ground or you can have them in containers, hanging baskets, and then they can be a year-round plant here in Florida. You just have to deadhead them once the flowers bloom and die. Then you can just cut them back and they will, you know, come back again.
Yes, I have them in pots.
Wonderful.
So I will have them around the yard, and I'm going to put my slug bait out.
Wonderful. That sounds like great gardening chores this week. Thank you so much for calling, Eileen. I appreciate it. I love hearing the roosters every morning. It's not Eileen's phone call if it's no roosters.
Exactly.
No roosters in it. Okay, so Linda from Ishnatuckney, she sent me a picture of some beautiful magnolia seeds, those real red ones that you can see with the seed pods that come after the blooming magnolia flowers. And so she wanted to know how to propagate them. So this is what you need to do, Linda. So they need to have a period of cold to germinate, and then the success rates can be quite low. They're not really very easy to propagate from seed, all right? And so you may wait several years before a seed-sown magnolia blooms, just like most of our fruit trees and things that are grafted. When they're grafted, they're much easier to fruit and quicker to fruit. But magnolias, if you grow it from seed, it may take 6-7 years before it has a bloom. So you want to collect the bright red berries, and you want to peel off the fleshy coating, okay? And so they're having the berries right now. You harvest them in the fall, and then you remove that, and you'll find a dark magnolia seed inside. So soak that seed overnight. And then you want to scarify and exfoliate that black outer coating. So you want to scrape that black coating off, okay? And then you prepare a tray of seed-starting soil, and then you put it into the soil mix, and then you put the seeds in the refrigerator for about 3 months, Linda. Okay, so find a little area where you can, you know, just keep the seeds in the middle of the refrigerator area so they stay nice and cool for 3 months. And then in the springtime, you can bring them out. And they should have started to sprout. And so then when you start to see them sprout in your refrigerator, then you can place them, you can do them in pots, which I would suggest you do it in a pot so you don't lose it or forget that you have it there, and then, or you can plant it directly in the ground. You want to cover it with just about 1/4 inch of soil and mulch it, keep it watered, and it will be beautiful. So I would do probably 4 or 5, and then you're more likely to get one, and so that will be help. If you have a gardening question, you can give us a call, 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text me at 23680. We have Dr. Gary Bachman, who's going to be with us, our dear friend, next week. And we'll get some more information about starting seeds from him. That'll be great. If it's Saturday morning, you're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. This is Better Lawns and Gardens and Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network. Welcome back to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins. This is a perfect time to get your gardening question in, 1-888-455-2967, or you can text me at 23680. And the perfect text message is going to be your name and your city or county, and then your question. And then that way I can give you the right answers, because it just takes a little bit of, you know, knowing the correct information to give you a proper diagnosis. So we would love to hear from you. And thank you to all of our new listeners. We are getting so many people signing up on Facebook and following us, and I love that. To all our new listeners, you never need to miss an episode of Better Lawns and Gardens. You can go to our website, betterlawns.com, and you can listen and click a download, and you can hear the show whenever you'd like. And then you can also go to iHeartRadio, and you can download all of the podcasts there. They're all uploaded as podcasts, right?
Yes, that's right. Just go to WFLAOrlando.com and search Better Lawns and Gardens, and you can go from there and find the podcast. You can also check out our contest page at WFLAOrlando.com and enter to win tickets to something special coming up.
And so we on our Facebook page, I always upload the podcast too as well. So you can just click on it. But when you click on it, if you just subscribe to Better Lawns and Gardens on iHeart or anywhere where you hear podcast, then you'll know when we upload the show and you won't miss an episode at all. So 1-888-455-2967, 1-888-455-2967. Or you can text me at 23680. So I heard from Dean, and Dean is up in the Villages, and he had a wonderful question. He says he's looking for suggestions. He has weed issues, and he said he recently had the lawn aerated, and he fertilized in June with a ratio of 24-0-12 slow release, and he said the lawn's being watered twice a week, and that's all he sent me. And so I said, Dean, I'd love to help you, but I need to know a little bit more information. So he was really great. I wanted to know where he lived, what kind of sun conditions or site conditions he had, how much turf do you have, how long has your turf been installed, how long does your irrigation run, who maintains it, and, you know, why did you aerate your soil? And so, and then could you send me photos of the lawn? Well, he was great. He was great. He answered all my questions. He lives in the Villages. His lawn is mostly sun, but one side is shade. His lawn is 3 years old, and he has three irrigation watering zones. He waters twice a week, 40 minutes per zone. And the first 2 years, he had a landscape service, and grass was mostly patches of grass and dirt. But for the last year, he's done all the care and fertilizing, and it's improved and it's grown. Wonderful. I think that's so great. But he struggles with the front yard, with patches and yard edges. He has weeds. He applied an insecticide. And then the weeds he has is crabgrass, dollar weed, and spurge. Great answers, Dean. I'm so thrilled because I, you know, can save myself a trip. You sent me the most wonderful photographs of your lawn, every you know, peek into it. So every side you sent it to me, and I'm so pleased because it really makes me, it allows me to help you. So I'm glad you're maintaining the lawn yourself, you're saving money, and you're paying attention to your lawn, and you're just not coming in and robotically just saying, okay, we're doing this and leaving. You're actually looking at your lawn when you maintain it yourself. So the aeration, I don't think was needed. Your lawn is only 3 years old, and it's mostly, you know, the weak areas are just patches of grass and dirt. And so those areas don't need aerated. Now, the other area where it's nice and thick, you do have weed issues, and one of them is dollar weed. And so, you know, these weeds you're definitely means you're overwatering. Okay, so you don't, just because we can water twice a week doesn't mean we need to. And so you have to understand your site conditions. But dollar weed is an aquatic plant. It only grows in lakes, shorelines, low-lying areas that have poor drainage, which could be a reason for aeration, and in lawns and beds that are overwatered. Now, the reason I say it doesn't need aeration is because it's only 3 years old. We see the need for aeration when the lawn is 5, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and it gets over-fertilized. Okay, over-fertilizing and over-watering will lead to thatch, and then you do need to aerate. But I don't think your yard needed it, okay? And so you want to, here's what I need you to do. I want you to get a soil test from your local county extension office, which you have right there in the Villages. And the soil test is going to tell you what your turf, what your analysis should be. You used a 24% nitrogen, And that's a little high for Florida. We don't need to use that much. We have plenty of nitrogen in our soils. And I think everybody would save a lot of money if they would get a soil test every year before they fertilize to find out exactly what your plants need, whether it's turf, vegetable bed, or just your regular landscape beds. Okay. And then that way we don't always need as much nitrogen. And when you put nitrogen down in excessive amounts, like the 24%, then you're going to be more susceptible to chinch bugs. Okay. And chinch bugs love fertilized lawns. All right. So the more you fertilize, the more you're going to be susceptible to insects. Now, the other thing is you fertilized in June and there's a fertilizer ban on. We're not supposed to fertilize between June through October 1st. The 1st of June through October 1st, there is a fertilizer ban in your area. And so you want to fertilize in the springtime, which is April, you know, end of March, first part of April. Or you can do it in the fall, spring and fall, and then that would be in the month of October. That's all you need to do. So it's going to be more cost effective for you to replace the sod in those areas that are declining because you do have take-all root rot there, okay? And that comes from overwatering. And so, you know, I would just go ahead and remove, like in squares, rectangular shapes. Take out the areas that have the weeds and have just the rotting, you know, turf, and then go ahead and just replace it with new sod and just start over again. That's going to be a little bit more cost effective and time saving than just waiting for it to grow back over the next two seasons or three seasons, which it will need, because you're going to be more likely to get more weeds in those areas that are bare. You just want to have a no competition. You just have a nice thick lawn, and then that's going to keep the weeds out. So I want you to calibrate your system to apply 1/2 inch of water, Dean. Okay, 1/2 inch of water, or 1.5 inches of water a week, whether you do it twice a week or once a week. If it gets 1 inch to 1.5 inches of water, that's going to be plenty. 40 minutes, you may be putting 2 to 3 inches of water on your lawn a week. And that's way too much, okay? And so there's no reason to do that. Now, how do you calibrate your system? Well, Dean, I've got your address, so I'm going to send you our calibration publication on it, on how to calibrate. But if anyone else out there would like to know how to calibrate your irrigation system to put down the correct amount of water a week that your lawn needs, then go ahead and go to betterlawns.com, send me an email, and I will send you the publication. So everyone who has an in-ground irrigation system needs to know how to calibrate their system. So thank you, Dean, for sending in the great photos. It was exactly what I needed to see. So I appreciate your frustration, but for the most part, your lawn looks good in certain areas, okay? And it looks fine. Let's replace those bare areas with new sod. You're going to have a much easier time taking care of it, and you won't be so frustrated. So thank you for listening to Better Lawns and Gardens.
I can understand that frustration because, I mean, you put the effort into it, or if you have an HOA, or, and it's just like, holy whatever, because it's, you're doing everything you can, you think you are, but then the weather comes along and it just totally discombobulates everything.
It does. And then you think the necessity of putting down insecticides and putting down weed killers or putting down fertilizer will help, but that's not necessarily going to happen. So we have another hour coming up of your gardening questions and answers, and we have the dirty word of the day, which is very seasonal. It'll be wonderful. And an interview of what we sow.
Ooh.
Seeds. And so we have Jennifer Jewell. She's the renowned host of the award-winning podcast Cultivating Place. Will join us when we come back. So I'm very excited to have her on, very honored to have her on, because she is quite a renowned gardening industry
person.
So she is wonderful. I want to thank Jim Charlier, co-author of Harry Potter's Herbology Magic Book, which is a book any Harry Potter fan who wants to create their own wizarding world in real life, they will love it. Great Christmas book. And so Christine in Cairo, Georgia, we're going to have your questions in the next hour from the Summit Responsible Solutions Studios. If it's Saturday morning, You're listening to Better Lawns and Gardens. I'm Teresa Watkins, and this is Florida's Talk and Entertainment Network.
We'll be back in just a moment, but while we're away, go to our website, WFLAOrlando.com. You can check out the cool things that we're giving away. And I think that we're still giving away $1,000 every hour, weekday, starting at 9 a.m. Go to our website and check it out under contests.